Welcome to the Great Western Woods World Building Podcast with me, Angeline Trevina.
And me, HB Line. Join us as we talk all things world building.
Get tips and advice for creating rich and immersive worlds for your stories. Whether you're an aspiring author or wanting to level up your world building for future books.
We'll be digging deep into our own experiences and sharing what we've learned along the way to publishing over 15 books between us in 5 years. So get comfy.
And grab a cuppa. Let's get world building. So I called this episode Origin Stories because, well, I thought it was cute and funny, which it probably isn't. But I was going to open with an apology to any superhero fans who might have stumbled across this podcast thinking that they would get to hear all about how Holly and myself obtained our superpowers. And then I realised, actually, what we do is we construct entire worlds from nothing more than, okay, basically daydreams. So I was thinking, does that count as a superpower?
Yeah, plus we basically get to daydream for a living, like that's our actual job, and being able to convince our husbands that that's completely legit has got to be some kind of superpower too, right?
Definitely. So anyway, just to warn you, this episode isn't actually about our origin stories. It's more like the origins of stories. So we'll be talking about inspiration and ideas and how we prepare to begin actual world building and writing a new book.
Yeah. So, Angeline, where do your ideas come from?
You know, this is like the classic question for an author, isn't it? Like everyone wants to know. And I always get the feeling that people want some kind of like big noble answer, like some sort of philosophy. And as far as I'm concerned, basically there is no noble answer to this question, because the only answer for me is everywhere and nowhere all at once. So one thing that a lot of writers talk about is this thing called plot bunnies, right? Mm. So if you haven't heard about plot bunnies, basically the idea is that you have one idea just crop up from like nowhere, and then suddenly loads of other ideas come as well, and basically your ideas are breeding like rabbits, hence the term plot bunnies. I'm not a plot bunny person. I don't have that. I do not get like that rush of ideas just breeding from one another. What I get, what I call them, is story worms. So I'll get like this tiny little niggle in the back of my head, just like an sort of like a whisper of an idea. I might not even know quite what the idea is. Maybe I sometimes just know an idea is coming. And yeah, mine are not like bunnies at all. They are far more like little worms, and I have to charm them out. And so I'm there, like, stamping on the ground, pouring water on the ground, wiggling my fork back and forth in the ground to try and charm these worms out of the mud. And honestly, like, sometimes it only takes, like, a few days to get them out. Sometimes, I'm not kidding, it can be months. It can be months of just this niggle in the back of my brain before an actual story forms. So yeah, the answer for me for that question is that my ideas come from everywhere and nowhere, really, all at once, which is a stupid, helpless answer, I know, but it's the only one I have.
Well, yeah, and it's not like you can tell an aspiring writer to, like, we'll just have ideas, because it doesn't work like that. I get my ideas from dreams, like, a lot. I keep a notebook by the bed and scribble them down as soon as I wake up while they're fresh. But I also get ideas from like reading things and watching things, listening to music, conversations that I have with people. Anything really can just, yeah, start one of those little story worms. So, yeah. Yeah, it can come from anything that I do, yeah, or say or consume.
Yeah, it's just being open to it, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, my stories tend to, the start of them is always like a teeny tiny little snippet of something. And it's actually a different thing every time. It's never like the same thing always.
Mm.
So it might begin with just like one character's name or something that they say to me or something that they're wearing, or it might be a location or like just a tiny part of a location, even like maybe a corridor or the corner of a room. It might be a piece of dialogue or a teeny tiny little piece of action. It might be an actual world building thing. So it might be like maybe part of a religious ritual or like the name of a big corporation. But it's always something really tiny and something that, you know, like I said about my story worms, something that needs time to grow.
Cool. Yeah. For me, it's almost always a situation. So maybe I'll see or read something that gets me thinking, what if it was this way instead? And that's exactly what happened with my latest book, In the Blood. I saw John Wick Chapter 2, brilliant film. And before the end of the film, I was asking myself, what if the Kimura gangsters in that were actually vampires? And that was all I started with. And I went around and around quite a bit. It was going to be like a sort of crime thriller, like a supernatural, with the protagonist was going to be like from Interpol and investigating the Kimura and then getting caught up in, you know, the whole supernatural side of it. But I wasn't getting any traction with that. So I ended up backtracking and going in a different direction. But it still started with that same situation, you know, Kimura gangsters who are vampires. And that's how all of my books start their life. Mm.
Oh, that's quite interesting. It's funny because the book I'm currently writing, which is the third book in my Memory Trader series, that the idea for that actually also came from a movie. I was watching, I think it was the very last one in the Resident Evil series. I think it was the last one. And literally, and I'm not kidding about how my ideas start as tiny little things. Alice walked down sort of like, you know, it's like a post-apocalyptic world, and she walked down a destroyed corridor which had pillars down either side, and that was it. It was literally that, just her walking down a corridor, and that sparked the whole idea for this book. So yeah, like I said, I wasn't kidding that it is like teeny tiny little things that start me off. But yeah, it's just funny that we've both been writing something that the idea came from watching a movie.
Yeah. So when you have an idea, where do you store it?
Oh, do you know, I need to get so much more organized with this. Mine are like all over the place. Like, so it always starts off when I'm charming that worm out. I always start off just with the ideas in my head. I'd never write it down to start with until that worm has formed into something more able to write it down. I just carry it in my head. I've also got like computer documents all over the place. Like some of them are on my external hard drive. I've got some in Dropbox. I've got some in Google Docs. They are literally like everywhere. One thing that is absolutely fantastic that I love is Evernote. So I have the app on my phone and I have it on my computer, and they're linked. So when I'm out and about, if I have an idea, I can either write a note to myself, or I can put a photo into Evernote, or I can record a bit of speech or anything I want, which is great. And when I get home, it's sat on my laptop ready for me. So notebooks, I have like about 8 million billion notebooks, random bits of paper as well that are sat around like my desk or slipped into other notebooks, and more notebooks, lots and lots of notebooks. Yeah, inevitably some ideas probably do get lost. Like I say, I need to get more organized. So they're just scattered. It's awful. What about you?
Notebooks. Yeah. Notebooks are my lifeline. Like, as I mentioned earlier, I write down the vivid dreams that I have in a notebook by the bed. And I've got a stack of notebooks on my shelf, like old ones that have been filled up over the years, full of random ideas. And mixed in with other notes that are completely unrelated things and shopping lists and all that. But like, I fold over the page corners of ideas that I want to come back to, so I can go back to a notebook and flick through and find the folded corners. And but that was all before I discovered bullet journaling, and now my notebooks have an index at the front where I can write my idea. Then I just have to go to the index and go, oh, page 45, that's where I had that idea. Brilliant. So yeah.
Yeah. I think we know very well, don't we, Holly, that you are just way more organized than me. You really are. or at least you do a very good job of pretending to be a lot more organized than I do.
I will say that looks can be deceiving.
There you go, listeners. The truth is out.
I'm very good at making myself look organized and efficient, but you know, I keep lists for everything, but whether things actually get done in a timely fashion is quite another thing.
That's fine. I'm a great believer in just faking it until you make it, or maybe you never do, but faking it all the same. So we'll talk a little bit about how we start off, like the very first thing we do when we start world building. So as I've already said, my ideas come from tiny little snippets. So I might already have some ideas about the world already, or I might have ideas about the characters or the story or whatever. But I always start any world building with drawing a world map or a map of whatever. I mean, like one of my books, The Notary of Gotlis Street, the whole thing happens on one street. So I have a map of just the one street. Or my Paper Duchess series happens in one city. So I have a map of just the city. Whereas my Memory Trader series is much bigger. So I have a world map for that. But yeah, I always have to start with the map. I need to know where things are. In real life, I actually have a really bad sense of direction. It's honestly, it's so terrible that like I can be walking down the high street, I go in a shop, wander around for a bit, come out again, and I have to stand there for 5 minutes to work out which way I was walking down the street. I'm like, where am I again? Or the bane of my life, you know those shops that have an exit door at both ends?
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you walk in one side, you're just browsing. You walk out what you think is the same door, and suddenly you're like in a different street. You're like, hang on. Yeah, those things are not good for me. So, yeah, I really, really need a map, and that is the very first thing I do. I like it because it's really visual. And making a map kind of, it's like it exercises a different creative muscle for me, you know? Plus I get to play with like colouring pens and paper and scissors and glue, which I love it. Where do you start?
Oh, I do love a good map. I love books that have maps like in the front cover, just but yeah, I have hand-drawn maps for my first series that I wrote, but when I tried to draw a map for my new one, I couldn't do it. I I was writing the book during NaNoWriMo, and I really didn't have time for the distraction of drawing a map. I managed without it, but, you know, I had notes on the geography of the city, just really brief, like, oh, you know, this is in the south part of the city and that's in the north, yeah, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I'll probably draw something out in rough before I get too far into the next book so that I can keep things straight from one book to the next, because I think that's really helpful when you're writing a series to have, you know, continuity.
Yeah. So,
but I'm not sure I have like a normal practice when it comes to world building, really. It varies so much from one project to another. But quite often, I guess, the world takes shape around the needs of the story and the characters. So, you know, if I need a certain element, then I create it. You know, that said, with this one of the things about the John Wick film that really inspired me was the catacombs under Rome, and I knew that I had to have catacombs. So in terms of world building, that's pretty much the first thing I did for this book, was the city has catacombs. I just knew that.
Fair enough.
Away.
That's pretty super cool, isn't it?
Yeah. So how deep into world building do you go?
I am so one of those writers that if I didn't strictly discipline myself, I'd end up like world building forever, and I'd never actually get around to writing the book. I love going down to like the really fine details of it. Like, I've made up food and like job titles and greetings, slang words. And because my books are quite feminist in nature, one of the things I really concentrate on and that I really take down to very fine detail is like the differences between men and women, like the social and legal like constructs and barriers that separate the two genders.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's a rabbit hole for sure, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I tend to world build as I write rather than before I start. So I might get distracted between writing sessions, but the world building doesn't tend to delay the start of writing, or not so far anyway.
Yeah, I do that a lot as well. Probably most of my world building is as I write the first draft. Because I generally have like a very vague sort of publishing schedule in my head for around about a year into the future, so I know like my loose deadlines for when I want to release each book, so I know how much time around or about that I have to mess about with world building. And at the end of the day, loads of your world building will probably never actually make it into the book itself.
So
I find that if I world build as I write, it actually stops me from spending just loads of time on things that aren't even relevant to the story or the characters or the themes of the book.
Yeah, definitely. You create the need for the story.
Yeah. And I find it just kind of disciplines me a bit to do it that way. But like, a lot of people will like to world build ahead of starting their first draft and get their world fully in place. So if you're doing that, the big question is, when do you know it's time to stop world building and start actually writing?
I think if that's what works best for you, then just set yourself a practical limit. And that might be the number of hours you spend on it or a minimum requirement to work from. And maybe that'll always be the geography, like, you know, creating a map, or the most important parts of the culture, or maybe it'll vary from one project to another, but be realistic because the book won't write itself.
Sadly.
Yeah.
That would make life easy. Yeah, I don't know if you know Philippa Gregory. She writes historical fiction. Yeah, she's the author of The Other Boleyn Girl.
Yeah.
And I was watching an interview on TV with her once, and she said that she didn't write a single word of the story until she'd done 2 years of research first.
Wow.
Now, obviously, you know, she's writing historical fiction, so like research is like the thing. But I can imagine some people are like that with their world building, but personally, that would drive me absolutely nuts. Or actually, my characters would drive me nuts, because there is no way that they would leave me alone for 2 whole years, because they want their story told. My characters do not shut up. But anyway, that is one of the reasons that I write fantasy, because I don't really enjoy doing loads of research, and you can get away with not doing much at all if you're writing in a fantasy world. So who's going to tell you you're wrong?
Yeah, I think it's a whole different kettle of fish if you're writing historical or even something like crime, like where you need to...
Oh, goodness, yeah. No, I couldn't write any of that.
No.
So I've got these couple of essential resources. I use these all the time. So my absolute favourite is a website called Cult of Squid. We will put the links to these websites in the show notes on our website. But Cult of Squid is a generator. And it's not just a name generator, but my goodness, it is a fantastic name generator. There are so many different things that you can search for, like names by sort of either different countries in the world or cultures. So if you want a whole load of really Norwegian sounding words or like Japanese sounding names, you can find them all. But it also has like story ideas and just loads. I love it. I use it all the time. So yeah, Cult of Squid is one. And the other name generator that I use a lot is called Seventh Sanctum. Again, we'll drop that link into the show notes. That particular one is really, really good. It's got a fantastic tavern name generator. So like whenever I'm like, oh, I need the name of a pub, then I'm like straight on Seventh Sanctum. I think probably every single pub name that I've ever put in a book has probably come from Seventh Sanctum.
Nice. Yeah, I thought of something actually to recommend for those of, you know, those of our listeners who are into maps. I used it a lot back when I was making a map for my last series, and that's the cartographersguild.com. It's a forum for map makers. So you can even potentially find someone to create your map for you. But there's also, like, you know, resources for creating your own maps, like, you know, things about different software that's available and stuff like that. So,
oh, that's quite handy. Yeah, because I know, like, a lot of people, I've come across a lot of people who are like, oh, I can't draw maps. But yeah, there are people out there who can do it, because there's quite a few people on Fiverr as well, who will create maps for you. I've seen some, like, people who have posted on social media the maps that someone has made for them, and they are like stunning, way in advance of what I can ever do. Mine's like Sharpie markers. But that's the thing about the maps, when you're actually writing, it doesn't need to be beautiful, does it?
No, it doesn't.
You know, it only needs to be useful, so that you remember if this town is east of the mountain range or whether it's west or whatever, you know. So
yeah.
So
how about cool stuff we've seen, read, watched? I'm reading Joe Coffin season 1 by Ken Preston at the moment, and it is ridiculously good. There was this chapter I read in bed the other night that seriously creeped me out. It was one of those where you close the book and you don't quite want to turn the light off.
Oh, no.
Yeah, really, really good. Seriously cool.
What I'm reading at the moment, I've chunking through an absolute mammoth of a book. I'm reading The Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett. I really enjoyed the TV series they did of it, like, years ago. I don't know when it was, but it was a long time ago. And it's been sitting in my to-be-read pile for such a long time, but it is a huge book, and I was so intimidated by starting it, but I've just hit the halfway point, and it's so good. I really can't put it down. So I really do recommend it, even though it has probably kind of messed me up for my Goodreads challenge for the year. I was storming ahead with my Goodreads challenge, and then I hit this book, and I was like, okay, this is gonna slow me down. but no, it's worth it. Really, really enjoying it.
Excellent.
So next is our would you rather question, just for a bit of fun. So here's a good one that I found for you, Holly. Would you rather have hands that keep growing as you get older, or feet that keep growing as you get older?
That is creepy and weird. Yep. Would corrective surgery be an option?
No.
I'm overthinking this. Okay, I'm going to say feet because I want to still be able to write and type. And I don't think I could if my hands got too big.
That's an interesting one. See, I've been thinking about this, and I think I would go the other way because, like, I'm super clumsy. Really clumsy person. I already have huge, like, massive feet. My feet are a UK size 9, which is, it basically takes you out of what is considered the normal range for women. Mm. And you can't in a normal shoe shop, you can't get women's shoes over a size 8. So I'm like destined to wear man's shoes forever. So I'm like, no, I've had enough of that. I'm not having feet that get even bigger because shoes are really expensive when you get into like really specialist shoes, aren't they? I mean, imagine if you got up to like a size like 20 or something in your shoe size, like you'd have to have those so specially made. And I'd just be falling over all the time. I didn't think about the not being able to type thing though, but I did think about the fact that if I had huge hands, I could carry more cake, couldn't I? I'd be able to carry so much cake.
And you could always get into dictation.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, you could dictate all your novels. Yeah. You know, cake. I've got my priorities straight.
Yeah, you have.
Yes.
Okay, I think that might be the first time we've ever disagreed about something, though.
I think, actually, our last would you rather, we went for different options as well.
Oh, did we? Oh,
okay. Yeah. It's we're going to have a fight every time, every podcast. Oh, you're wrong. Right, well, thanks for listening to this episode of the Great Western Woods World Building Podcast. We will be back in 2 weeks with more world building tips and tricks.
You can find us in all the usual places. We're on Instagram at Great Western Woods Podcast, all one word. And the show notes and whatnot are on our website, greatwesternwoods.com.